Good afternoon. This is Blog Talk Radio, and I'm Russ Johnson, and we have Jillian Green with us once again. And this is a special broadcast because we're going to be talking about this book, Saving Jesus, and she has read it several times. I kind of briefed through it, but it's really comprehensive and maybe the most important program of your life. And my son just ordered the book, and so he says he got it today. So here we go.
And don't look for anybody out here to save you other than yourself. You know, even Christ said that. He said, what I do, you can do and greater, and what you sow, you shall reap.
Okay, would you finish that statement for us? That's George Green. He was saying, to be saved, you have to save yourself. Let's talk about saving
right.
Jesus. What's the essence of that book? Let's start by... And talk about the gentleman who wrote the book, his expertise and his talent and all the things that he has done in order to be able to write a book of this nature.
Okay. This book is written by a gentleman called Michael Ledwith, and he was formerly a monk and a priest, right? He worked in the Vatican for many years as advisor to a pope, and during those years, he had access, of course, to all the secret hidden libraries of the Vatican. And we all know that there are thousands and thousands of documents and books kept below in Vatican City, which are considered unsuitable for you and me, that we are not fit to read them. And that's
wow.
Because these books undoubtedly would tell us that we really don't need the Vatican and the Pope or any other religious leader, that you're correct in saying salvation is a do-it-yourself program, and that is what Christ taught. He taught that everything that he did, we can do, and as he said to his disciples, you can do and more, not just what Christ did, but even more. And his admonition to his disciples was, be perfect, as your Father in heaven is perfect. What did he mean by perfect? Well, what perfect means, as far as I understand it in that context, is perfect balance. And this, of course, applies to you mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically. So the goal of your life and your choices, all the choices you make in life, the goal is to learn from those experiences, make wise choices, and through those wise choices, bring yourself mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically into perfect balance. Now, what this book does that Mr. Ledwith has written is actually teaches you how to do that. It's an extensive book. It covers a great deal of history of the church, which sounds kind of dull, but it isn't. It's a real page turner. This book it's a big book, but it's fast reading, because once you get into it, you will love it. And why do I say that? Well, because every single one of us, I am sure, wants to ultimately go home. And the soul's home is back with the Creator. And somewhere in each one of us, there is that eternal longing for reunion with the source, return to the Creator, union with God. However you perceive that, there is that search in everybody for something that very often we don't know what it is we're desiring, but we are desiring to go home on some level. And so all our life's experiences are really intended to move us forward along that path. And according to Mr. Ledwith, what has happened since the time of Christ is that Christ's message, which essentially says, you can do what I do, has been changed by the churches to now say, and through the centuries, to say, you can only get salvation, you can only progress forward if you believe what your religious teachers tell you. Well, that's not what Christ said. And so they have changed Christ's message into one of salvation through the rites of the church, whatever that church may be. And the result of that, of course, is that through 2,000 years or more, that has become embedded in the deep recesses of our subconscious. The energy that I call it spiritual DNA, the something of memory that we carry forward from lifetime to lifetime through our subconscious, and that buried deep in there is the idea that we are all sinners, that no matter how good we try to be, we can never be good enough, that we are victims, that we are condemned to hell and for all it, unless we believe and stake our eternal soul salvation on something outside ourselves, namely whatever it is your particular church teaches you is the way of salvation. So what Christ actually said was, if you do as I say, and of course I'm paraphrasing, if you do as I say, if you live as I tell you to live, you will have eternal life. If you don't, you will die. And when he says that, he means dead like all things in nature die, completely changed, transformed, and gone forever, changed into something unknown, right? Whereas if you follow his instructions, then you will come to be eventually an immortal. You will live from lifetime to lifetime with continuing consciousness. You will always know who you were. You will always know who you are. And what this wonderful book does, and it's, I've been an avid reader all my life, and I've read literally thousands of books, and I have never, ever found one that does what this book does. There are hundreds of books out there, spiritual books, religious books, books written by the doctors of the churches, books written by philosophers, and they all tell you what you should do. You should follow these words. You should behave in this way, da-da-da. But I have ever come across that actually walks you through the process and then tells you how to do it. And it is a requirement of this book, which you come to understand when you read it, that you start at the beginning. You don't do like I did and jump to page 400 to see where it's going first. No, you start at the beginning and move forward step by step, because what the writer has done is walk you through a process by the process of actually reading and understanding his words, and they are easily understandable. It's not a mentally complicated book. As you read it and you understand what he's saying and you pay attention, it actually unlocks your awareness in your subconscious so that you actually become aware of it. Now, this happened to me in a major, major way because, as maybe some of you know, if you've heard me before, I was born a clairvoyant. I have continuing consciousness. I know myself as an immortal being. I know how many lives I've lived, how much time I've been on this planet. I know human history for tens of thousands of years. In other words, I have already put the time in, so to speak, and learned my place in the universe. But here's what I didn't understand, because I would ask myself, if I'm this clairvoyant, if I have these gifts in me, if I was born with these gifts, how come I can't do X, Y, and Z? How come I'm still struggling on this same path year after year, lifetime after lifetime, and really not getting done with it, not getting nowhere near the point of Christ consciousness, nowhere near the point of mastering death, right? And I couldn't understand why. And this has been a frustration for me for the last 5,000 years. I've struggled with it. And when I read this book the second time, not the first time, but the second time, it suddenly hit me like a sledgehammer what this man was saying. That even though I have always understood salvation is a do-it-yourself program, I've always understood that the one we knew as Jesus Christ or Emmanuel is master of this quadrant of the universe, king, really the king of this end of the universe, that he is an immensely powerful being, a time time walker, if you like. He can move in and out of time. Someone that we would think of as having godlike qualities. No doubt about it. I have no problem if somebody wants to call Jesus Christ God. I don't have any problem with that. Neither do I have a problem with the idea that he is an advanced human being, because he was an advanced human being. He demonstrated in living flesh what is possible for all of us. So why can't we achieve it? Well, through this book, I came to understand that the problem was not the mental state that I was in this lifetime, where I had all this knowledge and understanding of these matters, but the fact that through the last 2,000 years since the time of Christ, I have been living in various environments, in various lifetimes, and each one of them I have been a Christian. I've spent a couple of lifetimes, three lifetimes actually, in convents, in Carmelite, one in a Carmelite convent, two in Benedictine convents. So I have been thoroughly brainwashed with the teachings of the church, and that was buried in my subconscious. So even though my conscious mind knows a different perspective on these things today, it was still there in my subconscious. And what this marvelous book did was make me come to that realization, so that by walking me through the book, by walking me through reading chapter after chapter, so that when I come towards the end of the book, and in one of the later chapters, he then tells you, so this is what you need to do to fix the problem. It was, oh my gosh, it's so easy. Once you see it, it is easy. It's like once somebody shows you how to do something that you've been struggling by yourself to do for years, and you haven't been able to do it, and then somebody comes along and says, let me show you. And you say, oh my gosh, it's so easy. I could have easily done this. Why couldn't I do it myself? Well, that's how this book is. And that's the state that I have been in for the last 5,000 years, I think is the state that many of us have been in. Most of us, in fact, are in. That through the last certainly 2,000 years, we have been brainwashed by the religious bent of the society that we lived in. And obviously in the Western world, through the Middle Ages, right up till Victorian times, really, Christianity was imbued into you. You know, we had the Holy Roman Empire that was all of Europe, and we have the Christians that came, the pilgrims that came to America. So a Christian religion has been imbued into anybody living in the Western world. Whether they believed it or not, it's got nothing to do with it. You were actually bombarded. Every aspect of your life was conditioned through the Christian tenet, through the idea that your salvation would only come about if you believed certain things that the church told you. And you and I, none of us, have had any way to prove whether that was true or not. There's no way to prove it, right? So then, of course, they tell you, well, it's a matter of faith. So it's enough that you believe it. Well, now, Christ spoke of that many times, you know, the woman with the bleeding condition, etc. And he said, faith, go thy way, thy faith has healed thee, or faith can move mountains. He spoke much of faith. And so I would like to say a little word about that. I said the other day when we were talking, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. This is not about getting rid of your religion or destroying your religion or destroying your trust in your religion. What I am saying about it is they have never told you the truth, and every single religion on the planet controls its population by fear. They use fear. They threaten you with hell and damnation if you don't obey their rules. And their rules give you a list of these are your sins, that if you commit these sins, you'll go to hell. And if you do what we tell you, in other words, if you have obedience to your church, whichever church it is, even if it's, you know, Islam and the Quran, so long as you obey their rules, well, you will go to their variation of paradise. If you don't obey the rules, you will go to hell and be punished forever. And what I am saying to you, and I don't care if you throw rocks at me for this, but I'm going to say it loud and clear. Every single one of these religions is telling you less than the truth. Even when their leaders maybe know something of the truth themselves, they are not telling you the truth. Because if they tell you the truth, if they tell you what Christ told you, then you will be free of them. They will not control you. You will know for certainty you are never going to burn in hell forever. That does not happen. You are never going to be condemned and damned for all eternity because you made some horrendous mistake in this life. You are going to get time out, that's for sure. You are going to have to pay the price. But this is the thing. We are all responsible for ourselves. We are all going to be held accountable for how we used the opportunities of this life, whether we did well or whether we did poorly. And it's a matter of accounting. There will be an accounting for how we use this God-given time, because we can't create time. Nobody can create time. We are granted the time of our lives, and we are granted the free will to use it as we see fit. Now, what this book will do is guide you into an understanding of how all this works and how you can make it work for you. And maybe your experience would be different to mine because your situation would be different to mine. But let me tell you how I made it work for me. In the ultimate chapters of this book, when I had read it the second time and I thoroughly understood what it was that I was reading, the good English in which it's written, and I've gone through it, as I say, a couple of times and understood this thing about the subconscious and how to deal with it, I then came to the realization, okay, now I get it. Now, how can I start doing what Christ, be ye perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect? Now, don't think for one moment that I'm anywhere near perfect. I'm like another million years of lifetimes, I'm sure, before I get anywhere near perfect. But I now understand the principle of behavior that is required. And essentially, it's kind of like the three monkeys. You remember the three monkeys? Hear mm-hmm. no evil, see no evil, speak no mm-hmm. evil. It's kind yeah. of like that. And for me, it worked by visualizing a huge mirror and seeing myself, my reflection in that mirror. And as I look at myself and my energy, I see everything in that mirror is reflecting perfection. It's not reflecting the problems, because the mirror side of it is, if you like, the God side of it, the newly minted, created side of it, the perfection that it was in the beginning that I am trying to take it back to. So this is how something works for me, and it's a lot more extensive than that, but you will find your own way to make it work. The essential thing is that this book tells you how to do this. It tells you how, not just that you should fulfill Christ's admission to be perfect as the Father in heaven is perfect, but how to arrive at that perfection, the steps, the process. It teaches you how to do it. It's a marvelous, marvelous book. And I hope anybody who has the opportunity will acquire this book and just work with it. It really yep. does work.
Okay, this is by Michael, and Michael is spelled a wee bit different, M-I-C-E-A-L, that's Michael, and led with W, correction, L-E-D-W-I-T-H, Michael Ledwith, and it's on Amazon. My son, he just ordered a copy, and he told me today he just got it. Let me, okay, let's do the how for me. Just help us out. Because there are a lot of people who don't read. There are other people who can't read, you know, maybe blind. And you know, I don't know whether it's in Braille or not. I haven't even checked that out. But there are other people who do read barely, but never really understanding all the nuances of the language conceptually. You know, some language can be difficult sometimes, but as you indicated, this book is simple. Let's talk about a little bit of the how. How do we, look, let me do this first. What is the purpose of being born? Why are we here? What is our, what do we do as when we come here? What should we be doing? Because you answered those questions, and I believe he addressed that in the book on page 34 I was reading. Could you just tell us?
We're learning. This earth is kind of like going to school, you know, because first of all, I guess the first thing we have to get into our heads is that life is eternal, that it goes on and on. When you are born, you didn't come out of nothing. And when you die, you're not going to stay dead forever. You are, throughout all the time that the universe exists, you are going to be either in a body or out of a body. You were either going to be living in a material world or existing in a spiritual plane, one or the other, right? And so we need to get, first of all, rid of the idea that life, with a capital L, is only 70 years or 80 years, because that life is the life on this planet that's only 70 or 80 years. But you might be hundreds and thousands of years old. You might have had a thousand lives. You might have had five lives behind you. I don't know. I don't know when your particular soul came into creation. That's between you and the Creator. That's not my business. It's something between you and the Creator. But most souls in this universe have been around and grew and evolved with the creation itself. So we have Earth humans who began their soul's experience with planet Earth. And we have beings on other planetary systems all through the universe. So there are human souls throughout the universe. The point is that once you have a soul, that means you have been given a divine spark of energy unique to you. And so when you go into a lifetime, say on planet Earth, you have that lifetime for the purpose of experience. So through those experiences, you can learn to make right choices. That's really what life is about, wherever you are, but particularly on the planet. It's about learning to make wise choices or right choices, because a right choice is a wise choice, right? And so each time you make wise choices, you add a little bit of energy around that divine spark that is uniquely yours. And that is soul energy that you are adding to yourself. And every time you get something right, you add energy. And every time you make a big disastrous mistake, especially an intentional mistake, you know, you do something knowingly that is wrong, but you do it anyway, then you burn off energy. You lose your soul's energy. And why is this important? Why does it matter? You know, if the divine spark is eternal, what difference does it make? Well, this is the difference it makes, that every time you go through history, there are historical periods, there are time allotments. Remember I said earlier that we can't make time. Time is the gift of the creation that we're given. And so let us say that modern Earth humans, Homo sapiens, came into their own as self-ruling beings on this planet about 6,000 years ago. They were handed self-rulership, and they were allotted time. And that time that they were allotted for their slice of history, if you like, just the same as you say, you know, the Roman times or times of the Victorian times or whatever. There are times in history, and there is a period of time, and according to the Bible, it is a time and a time and a half that was, and half a time, a time and half a time that was allotted to the experiential period for Earth humans. And that period of time began, as I said, about 6,000 years ago and lasts roughly 6,000 years. And it's coming, that cycle is coming to an end, well, within the next couple of years, right? We've come to the end of a cycle when everything will be changed. And the opportunity, it's not that you will be changed, it's that the opportunities will be changed. The environment will be changed. Your experience will be changed. And so we're coming to the end of this cycle, and it's important to assess how much soul energy you have actually accrued, because it takes a certain amount of energy to, or frequency, to move you from an old cycle to a new cycle. In other words, to have the opportunity to continue your unique journey through the cosmos without losing track of who you are, without losing your sense of self, but to move all that you've ever learned about yourself that's stored in your soul energy, to move it forward into the next cycle. And so it's a good thing to try and practice making wise choices. And it's also at this time in history a very good time to be reviewing this life and seeing what energy that was used mistakenly up till this point, mistakes made, to see how you can neutralize that energy or correct it. And you neutralize it by recognizing it and taking responsibility for it, and responsibility for all the ripples that occurred when you threw that rock in the pond, right? And then doing your best to mitigate that, if necessary, by going around and apologizing to people and telling people you're sorry. We are required to make amends. And the more amends we can make now in this cycle of time whilst we're still here on the planet, the easier it gets to be when we leave the planet, and the greater the opportunities for us in the future. So efforts made to progress ourselves along this spiritual path of understanding are well worth it. It's not just something you do for today. You do it for yourself. You do it for the people around you. You do it for the planet. You do it for the universe. And you do it for the long-term benefits. So it's something that's not trivial. Every time you make a step forward in taking responsibility for yourself, you move forward in leaps and bounds. And that is the wonder of this book that we've been talking about, Saving Jesus by Michael Ledwith, because this book spells out how to do it. Now, I hear what Russell says about, what you're saying, Russell, about people not liking to read or not wanting to read, or some people not being able to read, you know, people with non-sighted people who can't read this book. Then try to get somebody to read it to you. This book works by the process of going through it. You can't just skip to the end and get the answer, because it is the process of reading and understanding each chapter as you go through it that awakens you and brings you to that point of awareness that lets you complete it and move into the phase where you start self-correcting. You start putting yourself right. Now, this man, Michael Ledwith, apparently, and I never knew this or had the privilege of it, apparently used to go around the world doing workshops for small groups of people, and that this book is a compilation of all those lectures that he gave. So I am guessing, because I haven't found it yet myself, I haven't even looked, but I am guessing that there is a website somewhere that you can go to and possibly hear this book through his lectures. He possibly has a whole series of instructional lectures on the web. I don't know that. I only know about the book. Maybe right. You know, Russell, if he has a website.
No, I have to research that. I haven't at this point. But here, look, let me do this. Let me say, how does one know that you are an infinite being? I mean, most people on this planet think that they just got here, number one. Two, that existence will end one day, and we are fearful in many respects, most of us on the planet, because we were programmed for fear, that we're fear of death because we think that that's the end of our existence. How do you know that it's not the end of our existence? We've got 9 billion people here, many of whom don't even fathom or believe that that's possible, that we will go from here to another planet or another place in the universe, or that we came from somewhere. You remember that phrase, energy can't be created or destroyed, it just changes form?
Right.
That we came from somewhere, we're here, and we are going somewhere after this. How do you believe that when we were never taught that? You
right. Well,
might have
me,
been as
let
a...
Me,
as
let
a me. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Let me say this. Okay. I know myself as an immortal being because I have memory. I have continuing consciousness of thousands of years of human history, of Anunnaki history, of my history, and of lives as a human on this planet for the last 5,000 years. So this being the case, it is not a problem with me. If I ever doubted or questioned my memory, because memory certainly plays tricks on all of us, and we certainly live an illusion when we're in this life, we create our illusion of this is who I am and this is what I'm going to be in this life. You know, we decide that ourselves. We have free will and we choose that. So if I ever had any questions, well, they were kind of resolved for me because through this lifetime, I have met other people who remember me from those previous lives and I remember them. We knew each other before. For example, there was a time when I lived in England where I came from recently, right, to where I came from, to America, and I had two sisters. Now, I knew one of those sisters in England, and I met the other one after I came to America, and she lives in Canada. And they both knew me, and I knew both of them, and we knew our shared history. So you get these kind of confirmations when you get that level of awareness to be able to recognize these things. How do you get that level of awareness? How do you get this continuing consciousness, this clairvoyance, this whatever, right? Well, you get it from thousands of years of struggling. This is, you know, we all have to climb the same mountain. And the ones who have learned a little bit more, as maybe I have, can reach down and hopefully give the people who are trying to come up behind me a leg up, which is what I'm trying to do with these talks that we're having, Russell. I'm trying to help the people who are following on behind me. And at the same time, those people who are ahead of me up this mountain, like Michael Ledwith, are also reaching down and giving me a pull up like I got from his book. So the assistance to move forward comes from all kinds of places at all kinds of times. You hear somebody say one thing, or you get one vision or one memory or one little thing, and it leaps you forward another step. But we are all climbing the same mountain to get back to the Creator. And nobody is better than anybody else. Just some of us have been at it longer than others. And like the great sages or the great saints or many of the my extraterrestrial friends, they've been at it millions of years longer than me, and they're still climbing. There is no end to it. It's an endless spiral back to the Creator. And we are all trying to find our way up. Now, you asked the question, how can we know this, or how can we believe this? Well, let me say one more thing about it. What if all of it is nonsense? None of it is true. And when you are dead, you are dead as a doornail and don't go anywhere because your life is done, right? So what? If it's done, what have you to fear? If you have no sense, no awareness, no feeling, no anything, if you just cease to exist completely, what difference is it going to make you? You're not going to know. You're not going to feel anything. You're not going to suffer anything. You're not going to know anything. So I remember this came to me very forcibly. Many years ago, I was reading a book by a Tibetan Lama, and he was telling the story of how he first flew an aeroplane. And at the time, I was doing some volunteer work in Indonesia, and I was flying, making a few trips back and forth from London to Singapore and down to Jakarta. And in those days, it took 2.5 days, and you were in the air a long time. This was before they built 747, so you can imagine how old I am. That's a long time ago. But when I first went, I was afraid of flying. I wouldn't sit in a window seat and look out the window and see all that empty. Oh, no, I couldn't do it. It made me feel quite ill. And then I read this little book, and Betan Lama told a story of when he was flying a plane, and he knew how to fly, but he didn't know how to land it. And somebody asked him, well, weren't you afraid when you did that? And he said, well, no, because I know that if the plane falls out of the sky and hits the ground, I will only be 2 pounds of skin and bone by the time I hit the surface, because we're 80% water, right? So when I read that, it suddenly put it all in perspective for me. It's like either the wonderful stories that I hold to be my truth about God and the universe and the creation and who I am and where I came from and what I'm doing, all these things that I hold to be true about myself and life in general, if it is all true, and I believe it is, that's wonderful. But if none of it's true and it all comes to a short, sharp stop, what difference does it make? I'll be 2 pounds of skin and bone. End of story. So which do you want to believe? Do you want to believe in the eternal or not? It's your choice. Sure. It's another of those choices that you make. What you don't want to do is be afraid. Have right. no fear.
But
I have a little thing in my bathroom somebody gave me. It's a little writing, and it says, when you come to the end of all the light that you have ever known and step into the darkness, if you have faith, you will know that either there will be something for you to stand on, or you'll be taught how to fly. And I just love that little thing. I don't know who wrote it. Just one of those little things on a board somebody gave me. But I love that, because that really is what faith is all about. That you, this is what you've learned, this is what you know, this is what you believe, this is what you hold to be true. And you have faith that that's the way it is. And in that faith, there is no fear. No fear whatsoever, because it comes from a place of love. The Creator loves, right? And you are
but
a child
of the
Creator.
But we all talk fear. They constantly preach fear of death, of dying, of being impoverished or whatever. Fear is the primary mantra of this universe, of this earth plane, if you will. That's what they teach.
Earth is, it is the motivating factor that is used across the board on Earth. And it's the one thing we have to stop. Excuse me. We have to stop being afraid of the future.
As I listen to ministers, and I was listening to one today, his name is Geno Jennings. It's too much, really. I'd like to play 1 minute of what he says, that he's quoting Jesus, saying Jesus says, if you're going to be saved, there's a certain prescription, there's a certain way that you are saved, and if you go against that way, you won't be saved. You'll die forever. And here's what is how he put it.
Word. Every church organization in the whole world, your bishops, your pastors, your overseers.
Amen.
You can call himself an apostle, I don't care. If he's not baptized and you not baptized in the name of Jesus Christ, it doesn't matter the position you hold in the church, you're still in your sins.
That's right.
Amen. Who, Pastor Jennings? Everybody.
Everybody.
You're still in your sins.
That's right.
Unless you're baptized in the name of Jesus Christ. Don't you hear Peter say it got to be done for the remission?
For the remission of sins.
Remission means removal.
Right.
For the removal. Remission of sins is for the removal of your sins.
That's right.
Amen. Now, he travels all over the world teaching that. That
yeah,
if you don't see it.
He's a very wicked man. He's a very wicked man. And if ever he gets to the other side in one piece and is not torn apart by the hounds of hell on the way there, right, he, I am sure, is going to have a very big time out because he is not telling the truth. And it's okay if you want to lie to yourself. And it's okay if you want to believe something yourself which is not true. But there is a very special punishment, you might say, for those who mislead and lie to others. And he is misleading people. I just can't say strongly enough how sorry I feel for that man and anybody like him, because they are in for a really rough time when they get to the other side, I promise you. Now, let me just speak about this baptism thing, right? First of all, baptism has been a tradition with humans for a very long time. And Christ, as you know, went to his cousin John and got John to baptize him in the River of Jordan, right? And then the Holy Ghost comes down. Now, what this is all about, really, and I'm going to tell you something here that maybe sounds a bit odd because it's to do with getting in the shower, but the thing with water and energy is every person has their electrical body, their energy field, their, you know, the energy field around us, that we are, in functioning physical bodies, we are essentially electrochemical organisms. That we're all chemistry, we're all electricity. That's what's going on in our cells that's creating our physical bodies at this point in time. Now, when you apply water over electricity, the water grounds out and balances the electrical field. So when you stand in the shower and the water pours down over you and your feet are flat on the bottom of the shower, if you put your mind to it and say, let this water balance my energy, it will balance your energy. That's what water does. And really, that's what baptism is about. So when you are baptized, and I was baptized in the Church of England, actually I was baptized in the Presbyterian Church of Scotland, I've forgotten that. But when you are baptized, you are blessed with water and you are balanced in the name of Christ. In other words, you are aligned with the philosophy of Christ. That's what that is really doing. And they are making it a ritual and saying, by aligning yourself, by balancing yourself with this water flowing over you, with Christ, you are aligning yourself with his philosophy. And by doing that, you are giving yourself a protective shield against the evils of this world. Not your sins. You haven't committed any sins. You've just been born and you're not a sinner, right? Sins are something that the church invented. There is wrongdoing. We all know right from wrong. Our soul always knows right from wrong. So none of us have any excuses for the wrong things we do. We just have to be sorry for them. But we are not born sinners. And we are not soaking in our sin. That's a wicked thing to say to anybody. There are very few, very, very few souls on this planet at any given time in history that are truly evil. And these are souls that are so aligned with the darkness, with the evil energies and the corruptions of this world, that they're just plain bad. But they are very, very rarely born that way. Very rarely. It's usually a matter of their choosing. And so forget about all this, you're soaking in sin, because you're not. And any minister who tells you you are, just go right back at him and say, and you, sir, or madam, because there are female ministers now, you are no follower of Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ said, when I come, there will be many shouting, Lord, Lord, and I won't know who they are. Well, I can assure you, that minister is one that the Lord will not recognize. I can guarantee you that. The Lord would not have any dealings with a man like that.
Well, let me take another 1 minute. 1 minute only. And to hear what he continually says about other churches and other denominations, because they take issue, they take a stance on certain things that are happening here on planet Earth. So 1 minute, and then you can address.
Once I hear this and ignore it and still take it, I'm condemned.
Guilty of the body and blood
right
of the Lord.
Then you are guilty because you got one of the witnesses of Jesus preaching against you.
That's right.
The Bible said, bring forth your witnesses that they may be justified, or let them say that this is true.
That's right. Uh-huh. For he that eateth and drinketh unworthily.
What is it?
Eateth and drinketh damnation to himself.
Yes.
Not discerning the Lord's body.
Uh-huh.
For this cause
for this
many
reason,
are weak.
They're weak.
And sickly among you.
They're sick.
And many sleep.
They're dead.
That's right.
Read on.
For if we would judge ourselves,
you would judge yourself.
We should not be judged.
You won't be judged.
But when we are judged,
when you are judged,
we are chastened of the Lord.
You are chastened of the Lord.
That we should not be condemned with the world.
All right, you can put them away.
Amen.
Amen. There are many other things that have stepped into the so-called apostolic. Women preachers, divorce. Some is flying rainbow flags on their churches now.
That's right.
Endorsing same-sex marriages.
Yeah.
Transgender bishops.
That's right.
Transgender preachers.
My Lord.
I don't want to ever use apostolic. It's an insult to Scripture.
That's right.
So, obviously, he's against all of the women being in the pulpit. Transgender movement and all the other things that are happening. What would you say to that to that little spiel that he wrapped a few minutes ago?
Well, I would say, judge not that you be not judged.
Okay.
There are a lot of things that are going on in the world today that I, as a person, do not care for, right? And we all have our biases, our prejudices, whatever you want to call them. We all have them. I don't like cabbage, right? I have a definite prejudice against nasty green things on my dinner plate, right? So we all have things that we favor and things that we don't favor. And it would be nonsense to say that none of us do. We have not yet arrived at that stage where we do love unconditionally, which means love equally everything and without judgment. And clearly, this minister has a very, very long way to go before he gets anywhere near to walking in the path of Christ. You don't hear Christ ranting and raving like that anywhere in the Bible.
Most
of those things, he doesn't even comment on. He doesn't comment on most of the social things. He just simply tells you, essentially, I guess if I wanted to say how I perceive personally Christ's message, not that I have necessarily lived it, because, I make mistakes bigger than anybody else, I guess. But I would say that a key thing is take responsibility for yourself. Mind your own business. Don't be judging anybody else's. And remember, I'm saying what Christ said. Mind your own business is watch the beam in your own eye, right? Don't be judging other people. Just be discerning about what you involve with and what you choose. A Christ message is a message of unadulterated love, pure compassion for the condition of the human species on this planet. Pure compassion has no emotion in it. As soon as you put emotion into something, then you have bias, then you have judgment, then you have one side more than another, favoritism, etc., etc. Pure compassion comes from unconditional love. And unconditional love is the way Christ loved. He loved everyone and everything equally. Made no judgment on it. He didn't judge against the tax collector because he was a tax collector. He didn't judge against the woman who was an adulteress because she was an adulteress. He said, no, these are the mistakes. I don't want to even say the word sins. The mistakes of the choices of the human being in this human condition living on this planet in our history, our times on this planet. These are the mistakes that humans run into, that we all have our mistakes. And some of them are bigger than others. And some of them are willful mistakes. Some of them are unintentional mistakes. But they all are looked at from Christ's point of view with unconditional love, with understanding. Because Christ, above all others, understands why we do the things we do. And because he understands why we do the things we do, then we can be assured of his compassion and forgiveness. Forgiveness is not the same thing as being excused. We will have to take responsibility. We will have to make amends. And if that comes to some form of punishment in, time out or whatever, or going to the back of the queue when it's a matter of finding another life, or whatever that punishment or discipline is, remains to be seen. And it's not my place to even imagine it. The higher authority will decide that. And higher authority will decide what punishment, if any, we deserve. But what I can assure you and absolutely promise you, because I have died and been there and back again so many times, I promise you that when you get to the other side, when your life ends, if you stand up and say, I can see all the mistakes I made, I am truly sorry about them, And I need some guidance and some correction to get me on the right track so I don't make the same mistakes again when I get another turn at living a life, right? If you are in that position, then I promise you, you're going to get nothing but loving care and guidance from the people, the beings on the other side who are there to help you. And there is absolutely nothing to be afraid of if you are in that state of mind when you go to the other side.
Okay.
If you are in a very song. Yeah.
I don't understand how people can be born and you say they automatically know deep down inside of them what's the right thing to do and what's the wrong thing to do.
Yes.
You're born with that, that discernment?
Yeah, your soul knows right from wrong. Your soul is activated by a divine spark from the Creator. The Creator knows the difference between right and wrong. It's imbued into you. You always know the difference between right and wrong at soul level. Now, that when I said there are very few people who are born bad, it does happen occasionally. In my lifetime, I have run across two people who were just bad from the day they were born, right? But they are a great rarity, and neither of them was in America. I have to tell you that. Neither of them were in America. A very, very, very great rarity. And it is usually someone who in a previous life has literally sold themselves to the dark forces in this universe. And there are dark forces out there who are very anxious to get the energy of your soul if you're willing to hand it over. And when you have made a lot of bad choices, bad after bad after bad, and I'm talking about seriously bad, like, you know, killing people and things like that, very, very seriously bad choices, and you continue to choose to make those very bad choices, you make yourself very vulnerable to temptation and very vulnerable to the dark forces really getting a hold of you. If you want to be afraid of something, don't be afraid of dying, and don't be afraid of the government, and don't be afraid of COVID. Be afraid of the dark forces getting a hold of you because you're not paying attention. If you do enough bad things or put yourself in a situation like some people who are heavy drug users, they leave themselves vulnerable to access. It's like they open a doorway to dark ideas, dark forces, evil, if you like, getting into them, getting into their hearts and minds and really starting to control their actions. So we do need to be careful about that. But that's not many people. That's not, it's not 9 out of 10 people would never be that bad, that they would be vulnerable.
What's the special deal to be born on planet Earth? You got all these vast entities out there in Andromeda, Pleiades, wherever, all over the place. You got the greys and reptilians and tall whites and whatever goes on and on. And all these people are coming to this planet at this particular time. To what? To watch the human being, to see what he or she can do with their energy? Go ahead.
Yes, yeah. To observe what is happening, because we are coming to the end of one of the grand cycles of the universe in a couple of years. And that cycle is a change. Everything is recycling in the entire universe, not just on Earth, but it coincides with a cycle of Earth as well, one of the planet's own cycles, both geologically and historically, and this grand cycle in our quadrant in the universe, right, this realignment. So it's a spectacular time. It's like the ultimate fireworks night is coming up for planet Earth in the next couple of years. And what you have on earth that you don't have so much, you to some extent on other places, but not as the same as earth. The unique thing about being born a human on planet earth is twofold. One, we all have spread throughout our human gene pool, earth human gene pool, we have Anunnaki genes, which give us the potential for immortality. And secondly, and equally important, we have separation, total separation from each other. All normal people cannot know what other normal people are thinking. We do not use telepathy as a normal means of communication. We use the spoken word. And so that being the case, each unique soul is quite separate and isolated from every other soul during its sojourn on this inner lifetime on this planet. And it is at soul level that we are affected by the choices that we make. So we have better opportunity to make truly honest choices when nobody else can know what we are doing. Nobody else can know what choices we are making because we're separate from everybody else. And so our hearts and minds and our physical form as well can choose to do things that if other people could read our minds and our thoughts, we probably wouldn't do. And in that way, we are, as it were, self-judging as we go along, whether we are making right choices or wrong choices, good or poor choices. And of course, that affects our soul and either advances or retards our soul's growth as we move along. So that makes Earth unique. And I think this is why we have 9 billion people. I don't think probably as many as 70% or 80% of the people on this planet have come from other planetary systems and simply want to get into this last opportunity before the cycle ends for Earth humans to really make huge strides forward in their spiritual evolution. That they know that certain things, certain timelines, certain cultural lines, certain planetary and civilization lines throughout the universe are coming to an end with the grand cycle. And they want to be able to keep their own individuality and move forward into the next cycle. They don't want to disappear with the old cycle. They want to move forward into the new cycle with their own individual uniqueness. And in order to do that, they need to make certain corrective choices, I guess, for themselves. We all do. And as we make these choices, we are either throwing away the chance to evolve or guaranteeing that we will evolve. And if that sounds complicated and hard, I want to make it quite clear that Jesus Christ was the last great teacher who came to tell you how to do this. Michael Ledwith's book is a review of what Christ was teaching, so you've got plenty of time to read the book or some way get that information into you and take those steps. And basically, if you put it in a nutshell, it's re-examination of yourself as objectively as you can possibly do it. And do it with objective honesty and integrity. Take responsibility for your own actions throughout your life. Pick up your responsibilities and get on with it. And have faith that you will be in the right place at the right time. And I promise you, you will. That's all it requires of you.
Uh-huh.
That's all it requires of anybody.
That sounds simple.
It is.
Why?
It is
then
simple.
Well, okay. Well, at the soul level, you talk about the end of the cycle. Let's talk about the cycle for a minute. What cycle are we talking about? You mentioned that
about
four or five times.
Well, okay.
For those of us who haven't studied.
The planet Earth geologically cycles itself about every 50,000 years. any geologist tell you this, right, that there is a time when there are, you know, earthquakes and volcanoes and the whole planet kind of does a spring cleaning of itself and settles down again, and then we're off to another cycle. And that occurs on Earth about every 50,000 years. Now, in the entire cosmos, it's kind of a complex story, and I'm trying to keep it simple, but to give an idea of what I'm trying to say here as a simplified view, if you like, let us say that everything that exists is a frequency with a sound, right? And it's made out of light, pure light. And that light comes from some central source. That's why I usually would refer to God as the source, right? Most of the extraterrestrials refer to the creator or God as the source, because nobody really knows what this source is. All we do know about it is that it seems to be some form of intelligent light, right? Or some way of imbuing light with intelligence, with like diamond-shaped forms, photons imbued with a sine wave, which carry a signal, a tone, a frequency that tells that light what it is to manifest as. So we're talking about here the reality of how creation works. And really, nobody knows. We just have some theories, some ideas, and some science, right? But once the creation exists, as our universe exists, one of the things we do know is that every few million years, the motion of the universe, which is spiral, everything is moving constantly in a spiral, that spiral realigns itself with this central source of energy, of light, of creative force. And when this happens, it's like aligning everything like the spokes on a wheel. From that central source, new light, new energy, new intelligence gushes out and recreates or revitalizes the universe that already exists. And so that is called one of the great cycles. And one of those great cycles is anticipated in the next few years. The next 2 or 3 years, the alignment should be complete. And actually that light, that in new regenerative light has been flowing out and catching us peripherally here on Earth for the last, 30 years. It began flowing towards our planet in the 90s and continues and increases in intensity. And as everything is made from light, it's like remaking everything, changing everything, and letting it become renewed is a good word. It's a renewal. There is science behind it. There is mathematics behind it. The expansion of the universe, the basic mathematics for that is pi. The universe expands on a basis of pi, and we all know, you know, it expands fractally. Fractal geometry demonstrates the expansion of the universe. So there is a great deal. This is pure science, physics as well, because we know there are multiple levels to every existing universe. Do I understand all this? As a clairvoyant, I understand the principle of it and how it comes together. Do I understand the science of it? No, I don't. I'm not a scientist. And if anybody is interested, they'd have to read a lot of books, because I'm sorry, I can't help with it. But nonetheless, these cycles occur, and this one is occurring very soon, and it is aligning. It's occurring at the same time as one of Earth's own 50,000 year, 26,000 year cycles. These things are all occurring simultaneously. So it really is like a grand 4th of July for the universe. Fantastic. And we're all involved. We're all participating in it.
Here's another question. If when we talk about the Greys or the Reptilians or the Palladians or the Tall Whites or whatever, it goes on and on and on, they have the ability to do remote viewing as well as telepathy. We don't. The human beings born on this planet, in many respects, don't have that ability. Now, the scientists, and we go by Engel Swan back in the 60s and some others, who won't go into all that history, but the government established a program that they prove that this is a reality. And not only did they create the program, they mastered the program. So there are certain people who have been trained can do remote viewing, can do telepathy, can read minds. Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
But the average human being can't. They cannot.
Well, it's only because we haven't developed those skills. I can do it. I'm a clairvoyant. I can do as much remote viewing as you want to do. There is a difference between what a clairvoyant does and what the government teaches you to do at Stansted.
What's the difference?
Well, the government program teaches you to discipline the mind, send your mind out to look at a situation, to remote view it, and report back what you've seen. And they can do that in great detail. You know, they can even look at documents and read them and things. But what they cannot do, and that a clairvoyant does, is not only look at what they're looking at, but also understand the meaning behind what they're looking at, the situation, the cause, the effect, right? In other words, all the emotional aspects of it, a clairvoyant sees, whereas a remote viewer who's trained by the government does not. They just see what they see and come back and report it. Let's keep this in mind, right? Because this comes up fairly often with people. Why can all these extraterrestrials do these things and we can't? Let me just put a little word in here. Modern Homo sapien, modern man, has only existed as Homo sapien for approximately 40,000 years. That's a drop in the ocean compared to the reptilians, who have been in existence as their own species for millions of years. Or the Pleiadians. I don't know how old the Pleiadians are, but as a race of beings, they are very, very old, thousands of years old. And most of the other extraterrestrial civilizations that have survived their planets and moved to other planets and, you know, been star travelers for generations. They, for instance, in Andromeda, the Hathors, ancient beings. None of them are as young as Earth humans. The most astounding thing, and this is another reason why they're all coming to Earth to see Earth humans at this time. They want to be on this planet. And they're all around us in their ships observing, because never in the history of an evolving species has any species evolved as quickly as Earth humans have. This group, this that we call modern humans, have only been in existence since the completion of the genetic engineering by the Anunnaki. This is the people that we consider to be Earth humans, modern humans on the planet today, right? And they are only 40,000 years old from the beginning of their species. Homo erectus, which was evolving on the planet and which was the origin of the ova that produced the modern human, they've been on the Earth a long time, but not that long. You know, few millennia, but not that long. But modern man has only existed as modern man, with his brain capabilities, for the last 40,000 years, roughly, and has had self-management, self-control, self-will, who is, you know, running the planet, planetary management, let's put it that way. He's only had that for 6,000 years, roughly. So Earth humans are a very, very young species. And already they are producing wondrous, wondrous beings. That people like Mozart and Bach and Beethoven and Sarah Brightman and, you know, the mathematicians, Redway and these people, Carl Sagan, Hawking, these are all human souls who have advanced faster than it's ever been known in our universe. This is why people, we're an amazing, Earth humans are our most amazing species. That's why I'm absolutely certain when I stand here and pontificate on your radio saying that when I say you can do this, I know everybody can do everything just like Christ told them they could. You can do everything I do and more. You can do healing. You can do telepathy. You can do clairvoyance. You can do clairaudience. You can do remote viewing. You can do any of these things because you have the frequencies built into you through your Anunnaki genes and through the high-speed evolution to the human species that has brought forward.
But he made he made the dead walk. He solved the blind see.
He mastered death. That's right. He mastered death. He mastered death, and he told you you can do it. And we can all learn to do it. And that's what, back to the beginning of the show, that's what this book, Saving Jesus, teaches you how to do. And you know what they said to me? What the guys, the ET, my ET friends, said to me after I read this book the second time and really got it, really understood it, and I would take my walks in the morning and think about it, right? And I'd got the hang of it, and I'd been working with it and trying it out with a few things, you know, making it work for me. And I was really struggling with one thing I was trying to do, and the guys came in and they said, look, don't worry about it. You don't have to complete it in this lifetime. You just need to understand it. And now you understand it. That's all you need is the understanding. You don't have to get it to the point where you can actually do all the things, but you have to understand how to do it. And
so
that's what I learned from this book.
So the David and other guides come and talk to you from the other side?
Oh, yes. So much as they used to. They've been very busy in recent times, but yes, they do.
Yeah, but what did David say about August, if I may, if you don't mind?
That was a couple of months ago, and I was expecting to be gone by the end of June, and he came in and said, look, we know that you're intending to be off the planet by the end of the month, but if we might make a suggestion, you might wish to stay at least through August, because in August we are 99.9% sure that there are going to be some major events which will change a lot of things across the face of the planet. These are global changes that will be created, and that we think you might enjoy participating in it while you're still on the planet. And then they said to me, but it's your choice. If you're on our side of the line, well, you'll participate from here. That's what they said to me. So
you're now better than 80. So you're ready to leave?
Oh, yes. I've been ready to leave for a long time. It's just little jobs keep popping up for me, and I seem to, oh, well, I'll stay another year. Oh, well, I'll stay another year, you know, and so it goes on. But
you can make that choice.
Longer.
I mean, no, I'm serious
about
this.
Now for the first time in my life, like everybody else, I've had health problems throughout my life, almost all due to accident and injury. You know, I've been clumsy all my life. My head's always been somewhere else and not looking where I was putting my feet. And so I think I've broken nearly every other bone in my body at one time or another. So I've had those kind of health issues all my life, but I've never had a serious disease. And now I have a disease that will kill me eventually. So I doubt if I'll stay around and wait for it to kill me. I'll take my leave before then.
But here's a point. I think this is a relevant point. We've had people like Royal Rife and Tesla and even people like Edgar Cayce who understood that cancer, diabetes, dementia, whatever, Alzheimer's, are all frequencies, right?
Yes. That's true. That's absolutely true.
So if you have the right, if you have the right frequency, it's gone. Yes or
that's
no?
That's true. the way it works, it's not quite like that. It's about this thing that we started out with. Christ said, "Be ye perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect." And I said, that means perfect balance of mind, body, and spirit. Now, when a cell is perfectly balanced, it cannot die. It's not diseased. If it becomes a diseased cell in your body, then it's out of balance. And every organ, every cell, and every specific organ has its own special frequency. It vibrates at a certain rate, has a certain frequency. So when you get sick, in frequency medicine, the goal will be ultimately to be able to manifest frequency which is antagonistic to the frequency of the disease and thereby destroy the disease and restore the balance of the frequency of the organ. That's how frequency medicine must work, and that's exactly correct. There is one other component, however, which as a clairvoyant I've always been aware of, and that is what caused the particular disease in the first place. So that's how you would correct it with frequency medicine, and that would be transmitted most likely by sound. And indeed, something of this kind is done now for treating kidney stones with a sound wave bombarding the kidney. It's not right yet because they damage the kidney, but it's medicine going in the right direction, right? It's heading the right way. But what was I just saying? I've forgotten what I was saying, Russell.
Well, we were talking about the frequencies that are able to kill the cancer and diabetes and dementia and Alzheimer's and all that, and you
right.
as a nurse.
You'll kill off using frequency. You'll kill off the cause. Oh, I know what I wanted to say. That's the problem. Finding the cause, because as a clairvoyant, looking at people medically, looking at, to see if they're sick, I see three sources of disease. One is genetics. The other is accident that you did not intend to encounter in this lifetime. It was one of your mistakes. And past life karma, where there was emotional imbalance that you brought from a previous life and that is affecting you in this lifetime. And so sorting out what that source is, to my mind, the first thing you have to do when you're treating a disease. You have to know where it's coming from, because the treatment is different in each case, right? Now, for my own problem, my own health issue, which is probably killing me as we're speaking, and I couldn't care less about that, but it probably is, I knew from day one, I knew because of where it was on my body, it was sitting on the transmutation point of the body. And this is an area on the chest, on the left upper chest of the body. It's called the transmutation point. And it's when we make mistakes in life, when we make errors of judgment or get things wrong, do the wrong thing, and we don't recognize it and neutralize the energy and correct it immediately, it leaves an energetic piece of disharmony, if you like, in the body. And that disharmony all collects in this one location. And that if you don't take care of it, it then becomes a physical problem. And that's what happened to me. I know exactly what happened to me. In other words, it was my own fault. But like Christian Humphreys and the Buddhists say, everything that ever happens to us is our own fault. And it is. And until we can accept that, we can't fix anything, really.
Right. I would say maybe, but if I'm looking at, look, here's a big deal. There's a whole big movement lately, whether most of us will be able to understand or even see it. Many books, many shows are now talking about all the different entities coming to this planet. Many, many. And it's going to expand beyond most people's wildest imagination that finally the cover-up that the United States and other governments of the world wanted to stick under the bridge or under the whatever I was going to think when that was the Bush whatever, that it's coming to the fore. And so when you look at Delcy, when you look at Mars, when you look at Andromeda or the moon or Antarctica, there are millions and millions and millions and millions of people who have been abducted, taken to those places to work, if you want to call it slavery. William Tompkins talked about it before he passed, right? And if you want to get the book Chosen by the Extraterrestrials, I think you should get that book for those people who want to understand this, that slavery, in that sense of the word, is going on and has been going on by extraterrestrials using human beings. Even Hitler took thousands of people down to Antarctica. Why? Well, what's going on here? And blacks complain
that's a slave labor force. You know, they are using them for a slave labor force in whatever enterprises they are using them. You know, ever since time began and money began, right, wherever there is money, meaning some means of exchange which is highly valued and which the ownership of which the ownership gives you power, right, then you always will have people, humans, whether they are extraterrestrials or on the planet, you will always have some who seek power. And those who seek power garner wealth to have that power. And what do you do to create wealth? You have something that somebody else wants, and you have to create that something and persuade them to buy it from you. That's how you get your wealth. You have to have something that somebody wants to buy from you. And so in order to do that, they need a labor force to create, to work for them and produce whatever it is they're going to sell at the cheapest possible rate so they get the maximum amount of profit. In other words, a 100% capitalistic system. And so long as you have any planet, any universe running on a system that values wealth and power and uses money, you will always have some form of slave labor. And you might think that we don't have it much on the planet today, but actually we do. Every person who cannot earn their living and keep themselves and their family in a reasonable state on one hard day's work every day, 6 days a week with a day off, when they cannot do that, it's because they don't get paid enough money. They have to work two jobs and three jobs, and the mother has to work, and the father has to work, and the kids have to work, and everybody has to work. And there's two aspects to that. Sometimes it's because they themselves are so greedy, they want far more than they actually need, and that's why they all work. But mostly, from what I see, it's because many of them are not paid enough money as an hourly wage to survive on what they get. And I was reading recently about the $15 an hour wage. If you add that up to a month's pay, working 8 hours a day and 6 days a week, you don't actually earn enough money to pay your taxes, pay the rent, pay the utilities, and put food on the table. And heaven forbid, if you actually have to run a car to get to your job or have a medical expense in there somewhere, you've no hope. So you're going to be guaranteed, on average, to spend, and this is America and the Western world generally, and the rates of pay across the board, the average to lower paid worker, the blue collar worker, is going to spend their entire life in debt. They are going to be in debt their whole life to the bank. There is no possible way they could ever make enough money to get out of debt. And to me, that constitutes slavery. That is slavery. When you're in debt your whole life to somebody else, you're a slave. And I don't know how to fix it. I'm, you know, not a genius. I certainly wouldn't like to see any form of communism, because we know that doesn't work.
Well, capitalism is not fixing it.
But,
hello?
But capitalism's not fixing it. No, it's not. There has to be some middle way. There has to be some reasonable way to give a level playing field and a degree of fairness. But that, a lot of that comes from the minds of people, not at the top or at the bottom, but from everybody.
So we are waiting for Jesus to come back and save us then.
Well, he's not going to come and save us. Remember, next time he comes, he's told you, he's bringing a sword. So what he's going to come and do is come and wave that sword around and lick everybody into shape. And if they, you know, you can either play nice willingly, or you can play nice by force. But one way or another, you will learn to play nice.
Well, we're back to saving Jesus. What is he coming back?
Right.
Is he coming back?
He's back. He's back. He's been on and off this planet that I'm aware of since 1998. I was first told that he was back on the planet in 98, and he's been coming on and off the planet since then. So that's what I understand anyway. I have no personal way of knowing it's true. I mean, he hasn't visited me, right? nor is he likely to. But
maybe we need to put him in the White House.
He's back. My sense is that the management of the planet will change hands, but the new management will do it from behind the scenes, I'm thinking.
Okay.
I don't know that they will want to be out front.
Yeah, well, I would say that would
It'll
be
interesting.
Yeah. So, saving Jesus, what can we do in terms of just letting people know quickly, next 2 or 3 minutes here, or 5 minutes, or whatever you want to take? I'm stretching it out a little bit today, because I thought this would be an appropriate subject matter to discuss today, because saving souls, as you indicated, is a major responsibility of all entities on planet Earth. Is that right?
Yes.
Not getting the big house, not getting the
thing. No.
Go ahead.
The single most important thing you can do in your life is understand your own soul. Know yourself. Right? What does the Bible say? Physician, heal thyself. Right? What does Christ say? Go within. Right? It is within you. Anything. If you, whoever you are, wherever you are, if you just take a moment and stop and look around you, don't move, just simply cast your eyes at everything that is around you. And then ask yourself, how much of these material goods do you actually need? And how many of them are serving the purpose of advancing you as an immortal being? In other words, how much of it can you take with you when you leave this planet? And the reality is, you can't take any of it with you.
All right.
This has been a problem with the extraterrestrials. Many of the extraterrestrials with super advanced technology have counted on their technology. And this is one of the reasons why a lot of them come to this planet. They have counted on their technology to move them forward, to from one cycle of experience in the universe to another. And they have maybe evolved to that level where they have thousands of years of life, right? Not just a short life, but very long life. And they have been counting on their technological expertise. What they didn't understand until the very last minute, right, is that technology is not what will move you forward. Spiritual awareness is what will move you forward. That when the cycle ends, all the technology is the door. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you know how to use your smartphone or your computer. Spirit couldn't care less about that. What spirit cares about is, do you value your own soul? Do you value your neighbor's soul? Do you see yourself as part of the whole? Or do you think that you're someone separate and special? Right? Because none of us are separate and special. We're all part of the whole of humanity, and that's all humanity throughout the universe. And those who have relied on technology to move them forward, they're going to get lost. They're going to get lost in the shuffle of things moving forward. They won't have the spiritual energy to move them forward. They'll get left behind, let's put it that way.
So shall I make a phone call to Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and Elon Musk about this?
Well, I don't know about Buffett and Musk. I don't know much about them, but I know that Bill Gates and the Clintons are very likely to get left behind because they are not good people. They're just not good people.
Well, Bill Gates, he really believes in eugenics. He wants... George, just, and I want to get back to saving Jesus, but George talked about that before he left. He talked about the fact that forces among us who didn't have our best interests at heart. Now, obviously George was, he made millions and millions and hundreds of millions of dollars. Can we agree? Being a developer.
I don't think it was that much, but he certainly made a few million, yes.
He gave away a few million, come on, or more.
Yes, he gave it all away. It was all gone. By the time I got to him, it was all gone. It was his former wife who got the yachts and the cars and the mink coats, not me.
Okay. Well,
I was
briefly,
out of luck. I just got George, which was the best.
Well, yeah, because of the things that he left with you, right? He talked about Christ's soul. Just briefly, Christ's soul.
I mean, that's got me in trouble in Billy.
I presume that you are not in a position to help us meet Billy.
No. Well, Billy doesn't want to meet anybody. You already met somebody.
My impression.
What's his name down at, supposedly his liaison might be.
Yeah, we did.
But I don't know if he'd help here or not either. But, you know, Billy...
No, I know Michael, you know...
Michael Horn?
Yeah, well, I know Michael.
You know, they got mad at
me
because...
He's tried, but we haven't...
No, I published the Talmud of Emmanuel over there, and they got all mad about that because I didn't put the German in it. Yeah, I don't know if you understand the original. When I got the Talmud, we had a college kid translated from that high German, that Schweizer Deutsch, into English. And my wife and I took the documents over. I mean, this is even another more strange. We just took the documents over here, and we immediately, I sent out a whole bunch of copies to people. One of them was to a guy named, he's in California, I'm going to his name on that thing. Anyway, he reprinted it, and they changed some stuff around. And when he was channeling so-called Hatton, and the information we got was that was really good stuff. And I dropped $500,000 and got a divorce, actually about $1 million, and got a divorce over that thing because we thought they were really connected with, you know, that group, and it turned out to be a big swindle.
Oh, man.
Anyway, they published the Talmud, their version of it. Well, my wife and Jim Deardorff worked on it for 2 years. Well, now we got another problem that stepped in. That was my ex-wife. I've only been married a few months, just so you know. But my ex-wife and I, we spent 20 years going running around the world, you know, playing the game. But when we met Billy over there, we kind of made agreements together. Well... what was the problem with the Talmud? That was the teachings of Emmanuel or Christ, right? Well, where did Christ go, and where is he now? Well, we became in contact. Now that stops the whole story again, doesn't it? With the Christ being Emmanuel, who calls himself Sananda right now. Then we got the information on the translation of the Talmud. So then we did it. And we said, why do we want to put the German down? Because Billy wasn't responsible for that. That was the Greek priest, Rashid, who did the translation from Aramaic into Swissy Deutsch. It wasn't any copyright. It wasn't Billy's anyway in the first place. So what we did is then we were working on doing the translations. Then we were in contact directly with the Christ being energy. It's kind of like what I did, the Nostradamus material with Dolores Cannon. You familiar with her?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I didn't know you did that.
Dolores Cannon couldn't talk to anybody. She was stutterer all the time. And she sent me the manuscript. I so read the manuscript, and I told Desiree, I says, you know, this is pretty interesting. Let's check it out. So we made a contract. We published Dolores Cannon's first book, Conversations with Nostradamus, Volume 1 and Volume 2. I then set it up because we had a place in Beverly Hills. We got NBC and CBS to do our features on it.
You know, I should call Dolores Cannon.
Yes.
Do you know her? Dolores.
No. I met her a couple of times, but I don't know her. She wouldn't know me. No.
She's been doing this for 40 years. As a hypnotherapist, right? For 40 years?
Right.
She has a lot to contribute then to the program.
Yes.
To people's awareness.
Well,
right?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. I'll try to call
her. Her books are very interesting. What she was doing, she was working as a hypnotherapist, and she had this one patient who telling her that essentially they were Nostradamus, or they were speaking with Nostradamus in this hypnotic state, and that Nostradamus was giving interpretations of his own work through this girl that Dolores Cannon was hypnotizing. And so that's really what those books are. They're more modern translations of the work of Nostradamus, and they are quite interesting. Let me put it this way.
Okay.
There's lots of interesting stuff out there, but time is running short.
I know.
It really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether the Talmud of Emmanuel was in High German or Low German or who translated it. It's irrelevant. What is the only thing that people have so little spare time now. Let's not any of us be wasting it on things that don't matter. What matters is the state of your immortal soul. What state are you as a person in? Because your immortal soul is you as a person. This is you, right? So what state are you in? That's where, and that's true for all of us. I know it's what I'm doing with all my time these days, is doing the work I have to do, and when I'm not actually having to work, then thinking about the state of my soul. Because I want to get as much straightened out as I possibly can before I leave the planet. Less work on the other side, less time out, less punishment, less anything else, if I can straighten it out while I'm here.
But you're coming back.
This is where I think we need to focus our intention. Yeah, I'll be coming back. I'm coming back to work. I know I am. I'll be back for 300 or 400 years when I come back.
Is George coming back?
I don't know. I haven't seen or heard from George for 2 or 3 months now. He's off on some other new project, and nobody's told me what it is. So I don't know. There was some talk of him actually returning to the planet quite quickly, somewhere in South America. But I honestly don't know about that, and that may just be somebody's far-fetched story. I don't know. Nobody's told me, and I have neither seen nor heard from him for about nearly 3 months. He was here all the time after he left, and now he's gone on a new... He just said he was going on a new project, and that's all I know.
Well, maybe he... I know he built those FEMA camps, remember? The FEMA camps?
Yes. Yes, he did.
Yeah, all over the world, all over the United States?
He was asked to build a prisoner of war camp outside Las Vegas.
The government gave him
the drawings for it.
I know. And then he was, let me do this. Just 2 minutes, that's all. And then I want you to do a wrap-up for us on saving Jesus. I know you said it 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 times already, that the core responsibility of every human being on planet Earth now is to work on his or her soul. And I'm going to come back, and I want you to, after these 2 minutes exactly, come back and tell us how to do that.
In the meeting, as we're talking about it, we come back to, as you said, the population problem that we have. And in the meeting, they wanted to what they wanted to do was reduce the world's population down to, as the extraterrestrials said, the Pleiadians themselves said, the planet was originally engineered for 500 million people. Well, that was the meeting. They were talking about the same thing, that they want to reduce the world's population down to 500 million. Now, how did it come personally to me? They asked me to build an enemy prisoner of war camp in downtown Las Vegas. Who's the enemy? So we started talking about it, and the discussion is the planet, and remember, we have a lifespan that's changed drastically over the last 100 years, you know, around the 1900s when there was the population was down, what we call manageable at that time. We're at 8.3 billion on the planet today. In 1900, we only had 2 billion. Can you imagine how we're increasing the population? At any rate, when they asked me to build that enemy prisoner of war camp, my buddy happened to be the Ted Gunderson, the former head of the FBI for Southern California. Anyway, Ted took the contract, come back, and he says, they changed the name. It's no longer enemy prisoner of war camp. It's called FEMA. That's the Federal Emergency Management Agency. And they're building them all over the United States. And that's to get ready for their population reduction. Anybody over age 44 is to be eliminated unless you have a talent that they have. And they only want to have, their estimate, we'll be lucky to have 20 million Americans left alive.
Well, yeah. Well. Okay. Talk to me. We want to do a wrap up. Jesus, saving Jesus. Does he need to be saved, or what can we do?
Saving, the title Saving Jesus refers to explaining the true message that Jesus gave. And it was not about dying on a cross, shedding blood, and believing that that happened for your salvation. The true message from Christ is a teaching message saying that he had mastered death and that you can do the same as he did. You can become an immortal being the same as Christ is immortal being. It might take many lifetimes. It might take an awful lot of hard work, but we can all do it. We all have that potential in us to be able to achieve that. It's not like somebody says, if you go for piano lessons, you can learn to play the piano. Well, if you're tone deaf like me, you will never, never, no matter how many lessons you get sent to, you will never really play the piano, right? You just struggle through your pieces, as I did. But when it comes to mastering death and becoming immortal, every single one of us can do that. We have that potential inbuilt into us at soul level. And the first and most important step forward is to claim your potential, to claim your right to immortality, and start the process by following the guiding steps of Dr. Ledwith's book. And if you can't read the book and you don't have the time, then at least start examining your own life, taking responsibility for all your actions, acknowledging your mistakes, and don't become a martyr. Don't wallow and say, oh, I'm a sinner, I'm a sinner. You're not a sinner. You've made mistakes, and they were some of them really bad mistakes, maybe some of them minor mistakes, but they were mistakes, errors. And so long as you're not planning on doing them again, and you're very sorry for the turmoil you created by doing them in the past, and you are mentally and emotionally apologizing for it, you're sorry, and you're taking responsibility, and you're not taking responsibility for everybody else's mistakes. You are practicing the discernment of saying, I error, and I'm responsible for it. That happened, but it wasn't entirely my fault, and I'm not taking all the blame. Learn when to take blame and when not, and be sorry for your mistakes. Just do that and trust in the fact of Jesus Christ. Have faith in the Lord. Not some silly faith that is nonsense stuff that religions tell you. Not some faith based on a pack of lies. But some faith in the fact that he said, you can do everything I can do and more. So believe the man. He came. He sacrificed. He came to this planet and lived as an earth human. How rough is that if you don't have to? But he did it. That was his sacrifice. That was his great gift to you and to me and to all of us, that he actually came here and demonstrated what is possible for us all to do. We just have to believe what he told us and get on with it.
Well, I really appreciate you. I don't know what to say. It's just it's been almost a couple of hours now, but I'm glad you were here to help us understand this a little bit. I'm sure that a lot of people will listen to this and garner some truth that they have been missing, because that's a struggle to figure out. I'm here on planet Earth. I don't know where I came from. I don't know where I'm going. And there's a lot of apprehension, fear, whatever, built into the fact that we have to leave. But you're not afraid, right? Because you've done it so often.
No, I'm not. I am not afraid. I might not like what I'm in store for, because I know I'm in trouble on a lot of levels, and I know I'm going to get, you know, some kind of sorting out when I get to the other side. I don't know. I don't want to say punishment. It's never really punishment. It's, you know, it's kind of like this. How would you like it if all the wrong things in your life were on the front of tomorrow's newspaper? Every mistake you'd ever made was printed on the front page of the New York Times.
And bolted.
Right. Yeah, because that's what happens. That's what happens. So that's what makes it kind of rough when you get to the other side and you have a lot of mistakes to account for. And that's why I'm saying, as a personal viewpoint, for heaven's sake, try and work out all your mistakes now while you're still here, and be sorry now, and get the energy neutralized now. Get it balanced out. Get it taken care of whilst you're still alive on the planet. Then you won't have to come back to fix it if you don't want to, and you won't be in so much trouble when you get to the other side. But it's no worse than anything that you would consider trouble on this planet, you know, like a timeout or something.
Right, but there are a lot of people who have gone on before us and from our families, and like George has gone on before you. And you were married before George, were you not, before?
Yes.
This time?
Yes.
So will you see those people when you cross over?
Probably. The thing that links us always and eternally is love. When we have real love between people, any people, then we connect with them. Would they be my husband, my partner, my wife, my family? No. Because that was only the persona they had for this lifetime. But would I have connection with them if it was a loving relationship? Absolutely, yes. So we will always find those who love us and those whom we love. The connection of love is never, ever broken, never lost. It's always there. And we can always connect with those with whom we have shared love. But whether we actually want to or not, in many cases, is a different story. We won't see anybody we don't want to see. Let's put it that way.
Is that right? Oh, okay. Look, as a nurse, and thank you for becoming a nurse and helping a lot of people along the way, and as a clairvoyant, you have helped a lot of people to understand who they were, what they need to do, and now here we are with saving Jesus, and you're helping us to understand who we are and what we need to concentrate on. So I don't need to go out and try to get the money that Bill Gates has or Elon Musk. I don't have to take my time, energy, and effort working on that. What would you...
No.
What would you say beside the soul level energy that we have to work on? For most people, what I guess you said it two or three or four or five or six times already. Let me ask you this. For the people who are tired of doing what they have done for the last few years on planet Earth and they're ready to leave, for the people who say, I'm taking myself out, what's the ramification of that when people do that?
You're talking it's about called... suicide.
Yes.
You're talking about suicide, right?
Yes.
Choosing your time of death, exercising the ultimate free will to choose when you leave the planet, right? Okay. The first thing, you have to be sure that you have completed everything that you intended to do when you came to this planet, or that it's no longer even possible to complete it for some reason, which is very rare, right? So if you have work that you contracted to do and you don't do it, then there are certain privileges or possibilities that are removed from you when you get to the other side. You lose certain choices, and there is a high probability, very high probability, that you will have to come back to the planet and live a very short life in order to complete that time frame and get the work completed, get the work done. So you have to be able to know yourself, know your life, understand what it is you came to do, and then be sure that you've actually done it. And then you have the freedom to say, okay, that's all done. Now I exercise my free will and I'm out of here. And it's got mm-hmm. nothing to do whether you're sick or old or what you are. You're just choosing, right, to leave. And that's acceptable. If, however, you choose to cut your life out just because you can't be bothered to live it, or because your boyfriend's abandoned you, or your father beat you, or your boss didn't like you and didn't promote you, any of the things that disgruntle is in the extreme in this life, and then people go off and kill themselves, sadly, right? This is a great tragedy and not a happy thing for that soul, because when they get to the other side, it's almost a sensation of as if you are enclosed in something very black and very sticky. It's like black treacle, or imagine being dropped in a barrel of black oil, you know, that's the thick black oil, and you can't find a way out of it until such time as you come to understand that what you did was a big mistake. It was an error. And sometimes I have known souls take 2 or 3 years of our counting of time. Sometimes they get out of it within 24 hours because they can immediately see, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have blown my brains out. Big mistake. You know, I'm in trouble here. And they're immediately out of it. Others, it takes a long time to get out of it. And then, of course, there are all the tragic deaths that occur from drug overdoses, which are not intentional. They are suicide overdoses, but they are not intentional suicidal situations. And that generally is looked upon on the other side with a great deal of sympathetic understanding. It might seem foolish if I say this, but one of the things that people experience when they get to the other side, very often, a lot of people, is that they're in a great big hospital. And they're in a hospital bed and they've got IVs going, and this is their perception of what happens to them when they get to the other side, because they don't realize that they've actually died. And that's the case with a lot of ODs on drugs. They don't realize that they're actually dead, and so they're surprised to find themselves in hospital being treated as a patient, and they think it takes them a while. So It's a space of time between when you leave this life and when you get to that understanding, that conscious awareness in the mind that, hey, I am dead. I'm in a different place now. Okay, what does this place represent to me? Where am I? What's happening? Who are these people around me? At that point, when you come into self-awareness again on the other side, that's when it opens up to you. That's when you become aware of the, you know, your guardian angels, your counselors, the people to help you, and whatever your idea of heaven is, if that's where you're going, or whatever experience you're having. If you've died with a great deal of bad things on your conscience, it's usually like you're sitting in a, have you ever sat in a wooded place when the sun's gone down and it's kind of dark and gloomy? There is one place you go to on, yeah, there's a place you go to on the other side that's really dark and gloomy, not a fun place to sit in. But as soon as you come to yourself, to recognition, then you have all the help you need. So when it comes to suicide, you better think very carefully before you undertake it. It carries great responsibility.
Okay.
Essentially, you're giving back a gift. How much thought would you give to returning a gift to somebody?
True.
So you are returning the gift of life back to spirit. So you need to think carefully about that, and you need to be sure it's okay for you to do it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Thank you. And maybe
it's been my pleasure.
Well, phase two, at some point in the next week or so, while you're still here, I'd like to go over more of Saving Jesus, you know, phase two, if you will. Okay?
Okay. Okay.
Well, thank you.
I don't know
you
how
lot.
Much more we can say about it, but thank you.
I know.
It's
I know.
Been a
sometime.
Pleasure.
Well, thank
okay.
you.
Bye-bye, Russ. Bye.
All right,
you
take
you.
Care. Have a good one. You've been listening to
thank
Blog
you.
Talk Radio. I'm Russell, and I certainly hope you enjoyed the program. Have a good one.